We drove along the bright Nevada highway, the dry heat blowing in through the open windows like a furnace. In my little sedan, I had my wife of 10 years, Melissa, and our two children, Emily and Nate. Though they were twins, in personality, they couldn't have seemed more different. Emily had always been outgoing and talkative, while Nate was highly introverted, a devoted reader at heart who could care less about friends. With their wide blue eyes and dirty blonde hair, they resembled Melissa much more than me.
"Are you guys excited or what?"
I asked in a loud voice, yelling over the roaring wind. The air conditioner in my car hadn't been working well for a few months. Now I regretted not fixing it.
"I am. I love caves," Emily said excitedly.
Nate only grunted, staring fixedly down at one of Nietzsche's works, Beyond Good and Evil. For a 9-year-old, Nate seemed eerily smart. He had a mind like a camera and always read far above his age level.
"I hope there's no spiders in it like last time," Melissa moaned in the passenger seat, her blue eyes sparkling mischievously.
"Those things were bigger than my face." I shuddered slightly at the recollection of the brown lecluses we had encountered in the last cave. I never much liked snakes or spiders, especially when they hid in dark spaces waiting for a human to walk right into them. Brown lecluses especially looked like something from a nightmare to me, some hellish evolutionary chasm that produced monsters.
"Better those than rattlesnakes," I said, seeing the sign up ahead reading, "1 mile to Sandstone Nature Preserve."
To get to the cave, we would have to hike 20 minutes through the flat, packed earth of Nevada.
"I didn't really know about that," Melissa said. "A nest of brown lecluses or black widows or a nest of rattlesnakes will both kill you. God, what a shitty way to go." Melissa had heard about this cave from a friend at work. He had called it Sandstone Cave. He promised it stood far off the beaten path, and that mostly nobody knew about it. He had given her a hand-drawn map, though it seemed like a fairly straight shot to the cliffs. As we parked in the dirt lot, sharp stones crunched under the car's tires. Melissa pulled the map out.
"Jesus, Carlos's writing is so damn bad," she said, squinting as she put the map up to her face.
I laughed, seeing her high-cheekboned, paled face squeezing into the ludicrous expression. She gave me a dirty look.
"I just think you need glasses," I said, putting an arm around her.
Emily laughed in the back, a high-pitched, energetic sound that matched her bubbly personality.
"My teacher says that when you get old, your eyes and ears stop working," she said. "Maybe Mom's just too old. Her eyes are falling apart like an old car."
"See what you've started?" Melissa said, giving me a crooked half smile.
Together, we got out of the car, grabbing supplies from the trunk. Headlamps, extra batteries, food, water, and a first aid kit. Nate and Emily each took a small pack of their own. If somehow, God forbid, someone got separated, I didn't want them stumbling through the pitch-black cave, crawling and screaming at the darkness like panicked animals. Just the thought sent waves of dread dripping down my spine. We walked quickly and determinedly along the bare dirt trail. It wound its way through the hard-packed earth, serpentine and twisting. Large rocks that looked like they were dropped by giants started appearing along the sides, folded by steeper and steeper cliffs of red sandstone.
"This is amazing," Melissa said excitedly. "I can't believe how empty this place is. We have this whole park to ourselves. It's so beautiful here."
"It's pretty far off the beaten trail," I answered. "I doubt these trails are even..."
"Oh, shoot," Melissa screamed, jumping back suddenly.
I jerked, twisting my head in confusion.
Stunted, leafless bushes grew along the dark, cool patches under the cliffs that loomed overhead on both sides. And then I saw it. A dark brown silhouette, curled up into a spiral. It blended in with the sand and shadows. The snake hissed, its forked tongue flicking in and out as it stared between me and Melissa with its slitted reptilian eyes. "A rattlesnake," I said, putting my arms out and pushing the two kids back without thinking. I saw the rattlesnake looked young and small, certainly not a full-grown adult. Like many juvenile rattlesnakes, its rattler probably hadn't fully developed yet, which made them far more dangerous in their deadly silence. If Melissa hadn't seen it, I may have stepped onto the thing's tail. Its slitted eyes glittered with daring and fearlessness. I felt speechless, and Melissa had turned and started jogging back in the other direction. Abruptly, I felt a small body push past me. To my horror, I saw Nate approaching the rattlesnake, carrying a long, thick branch with a fork at the end. "Nate!" I yelled in panic. "Get back here!" He calmly continued staring at the snake as it shook its tail furiously. Its fangs swiveled out like switchblades. Drips of venom fell from them. The snake opened its mouth wide, showing its cottony white gums. Keeping a safe distance, Nate pushed it back by the neck. The snake writhed and hissed, twisting its body in rapid figure eights. It bit at the thick stick over and over, its thin, flat head jerking out in multiple rapid strikes. Nate threw the stick into the opposite direction. The snake flew through the air, landing 10 feet away. It slithered away into a bush, disappearing from view within moments. Rattled by the experience, I stood shaking and hyperventilating in the same spot for a long time. Emily had fallen far back with Melissa, their eyes wide and filled with fear. Both of them feared snakes even more than I did. Only Nate seemed totally calm as he surveyed me. "It's gone," he said. "We can go now. I think I could see the opening of the cave from here." Looking up, I realized he was right. A few hundred paces away stood a massive, jagged hole in the shape of a screaming mouth. It reminded me of the cavernous mouth of some toothless old man, magnified to monstrous proportions, black and empty and formed into a silent scream. We walked together in silence. The entrance grew larger with every step. As we drew nearer, I saw it stood nearly 5 times the height of a man. Nate's eyes gleamed excitedly. "When you stare into the abyss stares into you," he said as he stared intently into the screaming mouth of the cave. I glanced at him. "What does that even mean?" I asked, feeling out of my element. "When you stare into the recesses of your mind, the meaningless and pain and insanity that follows every person like a shadow, then it stares back. The dark places of the mind have eyes of their own, lots of them. And when you stare into them, they stare just as deeply back at you," he said, reciting his knowledge of Nietzsche philosophy with a simple ease. "Well, that's morbid," Melissa said, rolling her eyes. Nate and I led the way into Soapstone Cavern. The air felt cold and damp. Currents blew out from passages deeper under the earth, smelling slightly of sulfur and algae. "This cave smells funny," Emily whispered, wrinkling her small nose. "It's probably just subterranean rivers or lakes," I said. I noticed how our voices echoed down the cavern, eerily bouncing off the rocks until the words became nothing more than shadows of whispers. We pulled out our LED headlamps as the last of the sunlight died at the threshold. The path curved sharply to the right up ahead, covered in stalactites and stalagmites that jutted out like fangs from the wet, gleaming rock. We walked for about 15 minutes. Melissa ended up getting bored and walking slightly ahead of us, so she was the first to notice the extremely disturbing sights we would find in this cave.
"What the F?" she yelled loudly. "What is that?"
I jogged forward, turning a sharp corner to see her staring open-mouthed at a mountain of children's shoes piled up on the right side of the tunnel. Some looked almost brand new, while others looked used and worn. The styles ranged over decades, and the sizes varied from those of a toddler to those of a teenager. In many of the shoes, I saw yellowed leg bones jutting out. The pile loomed over 5 feet in the air, containing probably thousands of shoes.
"Jeezo," I whispered, horrified. "Who put this here? Is this some sort of weird memorial or something?"
"There's legs in some of those shoes, Daddy," Emily said nervously. "Whose legs are those, Daddy?"
"No, honey, those must be animal bones," Melissa exclaimed, putting a thin hand around Emily's shoulder and pulling her close. "Just animal bones." I took a step closer to the pile, inspecting the bones. I couldn't tell at a single glance if the bones were animal or human. They all looked small, child-sized, perhaps, but maybe they could have came from a younger deer or a coyote.
"I'm not sure if those are animal bones," I said.
"I think we should turn around. This is creepy as hell. For all we know, this could be a trophy site of some sick turd who kills kids and steals their shoes. We should have the police come in and check if they think the bones are human or not. What if a serial killer put these here? What if this is his shrine to death?"
"Dad,"
Nate said with a tone of fear in his voice I had rarely heard there.
"There's someone else here."
I spun around, my heart frantically beating in my chest as the gravity of his words sunk in. Beyond the silhouettes of my family, I saw the dim beam of a flashlight bouncing up and down the cavern walls. A rising sense of panic gripped me. With my nerves sputtering, I grabbed Melissa's arm.
"We need to go," I hissed through gritted teeth. "I don't know who the hell that is. That might be the sicko putting the shoes here."
Stumbling alongside Nate and Emily, we took off, heading deeper into the winding tunnels of Soapstone Cavern, where further evidence of atrocities awaited like a guillotine blade ready to fall.
"Run as fast as you can," I told the kids, pushing them forward.
Our headlamps bounced off the jagged rocks forming the sharp walls off the cavern. They started closing in on us. The tunnel rapidly narrowed from a wide path 10 feet across into something the width and height of a coffin. We had to slow down and go single file. I glanced back, seeing the glare of the flashlight emerging from around the corner.
"He's almost here,"
I whispered, urging them on. The kids squeezed through with no problem, but Melissa and I kept getting caught on the sharp rocks that sliced on our clothing and flesh. The tunnel seemed to only get narrower as it turned 90 degrees.
"Hey!"
A low, hoarse voice yelled from behind me.
"Don't go in there! Wait!"
The flashlight landed directly on me. I pushed myself forward with Melissa only inches in front of me, stumbling into her back. As we navigated the turn, the flashlight beam fell further behind us, but it would only be a matter of a minute until the unknown figure caught up with us. In front of us, Emily gave a panicked shriek. Nate and Emily stood shell-shocked and still, their mouths open in identical expressions of horror. I followed their gaze, seeing a sight from hell. An infant with bone-white skin and a cavernous, toothless mouth like that of an obscene old man slunk across the wall. It scurried forward like a salamander, clinging to the irregular granite surface with no apparent effort. Its naked hands and feet were formed into sharp, claw-like points. It gave a scream like a witch being burned alive, gurgling with deep, resonant notes of agony. Its naked body seemed twisted and deformed, and patches of what looked like black mold ate away at its arms and legs.
"Go back! Go back!" Melissa wailed, slamming into me in her frantic attempt to move away from the abomination. "Oh God, go back! What the hell is that thing?"
It never stopped screaming, never paused to inhale, as if it didn't need to breathe at all. I didn't need any motivation. I shoved my body through the tight tunnel, forming my way back through the steep corner. The shrieking infant was only a stone's throw away from Nate and Emily, who pushed forward at Melissa's heels. I felt new scrapes and gashes tear across my body from the sharp rocks of the cave, but with the rush of adrenaline, I wouldn't notice the pain until later. As soon as we made it around the corner, the shrieking cut off as suddenly as if a record had been stopped. A man was in front of us, blocking the way. He had a rounded moon face and close-cropped black hair. His dark eyes twinkled merrily as he shone a flashlight into our faces.
"Carlos?" Melissa asked. She constantly checked her back.
The panic I still felt was reflected in her pale face and wide, shell-shocked eyes.
"Carlos, thank God you're here. Something is wrong with this place."
Carlos only gave a faint smile at this, but it didn't reach his black eyes. "I see you brought your children," he said in a strange, disjointed cadence. "More children in the shadows." His voice came out low and husky. He stared constantly down at Nate and Emily, an unreadable expression on his face.
"Did you hear what I said?" Melissa said. "We need to get the hell out of here."
Carlos's gaze never faltered from the kids. With his thin lips pressed into a tight grimace, he took a predatory step forward, keeping his right hand on his black jeans pocket.
"Stay back," I hissed.
My intuition screamed at me that something was wrong. I pushed the kids back, not sure if the greater threat came from behind us or in front of us.
"You take one more step."
I saw a silver flash in the white glare of the headlamp. Carlos pulled out a knife, slashing up at my throat. I fell back, hearing the blade whiz past my skin. I slammed hard into the wet granite floor, feeling the wind getting knocked out of me. Melissa continued pushing the kids back. I could hear her panicked breathing, seeing the drops of sweat falling off her nose. Everything seemed to happen in slow motion. Carlos struck out with the knife, slicing it right to left and left to right in a manic frenzy. I heard a wet thud above me, followed by a bubbling grunt. Melissa fell down next to me, her throat cut from ear to ear. Blood spurted from the open gash as she choked, coughing and gurgling with the last of her dying energy. Within seconds, she had gone still. Her pupils started dilating, her lips fading to a suffocating bluish cast. I crawled frantically away, pushing myself up in a blind panic. The kids had disappeared around the corner, back into the direction of the wailing bone-white infant. In the chaos of the moment, I had lost sight of them. If I lost Melissa and the kids in one day, I might as well just go home and hang myself. I would have nothing left to live for after all. Carlos was a heavy-set man, and he had had a difficult time navigating through the tight corners of the passage. Breathing heavily, still in shock over the death of my wife, I ripped my way through, seeing the silhouettes of Emily and Nate far ahead of me. I saw no sign of the strange demonic infant that had crawled the walls like a centipede, thank God. The passageway rapidly opened up into a massive chamber that echoed with every footfall. I glanced back, seeing Carlos's flashlight bobbing not far behind me. Nate and Emily screamed ahead of me. I sprinted forwards, trying to get to them.
"Dad, look!"
Emily cried, pointing at what laid at the end of the chamber. Dozens of human skeletons laid endlessly dreaming. Their corpses were tossed haphazardly into a pile, their limbs intertwined like rats in a rat king. All the bodies looked small, like those of children. The bones began to shake and rattle. The yellowed cracks widened as they danced, jumping up and down as if they were possessed. From the pitch blackness at the end of the chamber, more corpse-white figures of children stepped out, their pale cataract eyes haunted and dead. Carlos came around the corner, screaming with insanity and bloodlust. He had the gore-stained knife raised high. He saw me, his eyes looked dark and hooded as he sprinted forward. The bodies of the children slung forwards, some of them creeping along the walls and ceilings, others dragging broken legs behind them. I thought they would come for me and Nate and Emily, surround us and murder us, but they streamed right past us like a river rushing past a boulder. I saw the scurrying infant slinking along the wall, its cavernous mouth opened wide in a silent scream. It hit Carlos in a blur, shattering his right leg with a sickening crack. His knee exploded in a shower of gore and bone splinters. He fell on his side, his sick, confused wailing intensified as more of the undead children surrounded him. They stood over him like grim reapers, staring down at him with their pale, blind eyes.
"You killed us," the tallest of them said.
It looked like a teenager, a boy with rotted strips of blue jeans and a t-shirt still hanging from his mummified flesh. His lipless mouth chattered with every word. His voice sounded like an autumn wind blowing through dry leaves.
"But in this place, nothing ever really dies. We live in the shadows here, and it feeds us, and we feed it. And you too will feed it."
"No," Carlos whimpered, trying to crawl away.
"Get away from me! You're dead! I killed you!"
The teenage corpse gave a grim, lipless smile as the wailing infant slithered forwards towards Carlos's face. It stopped mere inches from it, its wide eyes staring blindly into his black ones. Without warning, it started crawling under his body, ripping at its chest with its sharp claws. With a gurgling banshee wail, it widened the hole, snapping the bones like twigs as it shoved its widened abyss of a mouth deeper inside. Carlos gave a scream of abject agony and terror as the infant burrowed into his body like a squirming tick. I saw its thin, emaciated legs slipping off the wet cavern floor before they disappeared from view moments later. Carlos coughed up blood, clawing at the spurting wound of his belly and torso. But his movements rapidly lost energy. He stared up sightlessly at the jagged ceiling as his breaths became slower and slower. With a last chattering of teeth and a clenching of fists, he emitted a choking death gasp and laid still. I put my arms around Nate and Emily, pulling us closer together. I could feel their small bodies trembling with fear. Their skin felt cold and clammy under my palms. They looked up at me with dilated pupils, looking more like frightened animals than children at the moment.
"Daddy, I'm scared,"
Emily whispered in a quavering voice.
"I want to go home."
"We'll go home, I promise," I said, though in reality, I could do no such thing. For all I knew, we would all die within the next few moments. I was afraid to look up from the faces of my children, afraid to look at the semicircle of undead abominations staring at us with their milk-white skin and filmy ghost eyes. "Is this staring into the abyss?" Nate asked. "Am I going to come out on the other side?" I opened my mouth to respond when an icy hand grabbed my shoulder. Its claw-like fingers dug into my flesh, turning me around. Standing in front of me stood the apparent leader of the undead children, the teenage boy with the rotted clothes. "A price must be paid," the chalk-white corpse of the teenager said. "A life for a life. We have saved you from the killer of children, the hunter of men. We want one of yours to stay with us forever. We grow lonely here in the endless darkness, surrounded only by bones and stone tombs." Emily and Nate stood hugging each other, looking small and helpless. I felt like I would throw up. "You will have to kill me before you take one of my children," I hissed. "That monster already killed my wife." "He murdered all of us too," the boy gurgled in his low, eerie voice. Slowly, methodically tearing off limbs and cutting out eyes with fanatical obsession, he learned how to make it last. Decades of work, hunting and tearing apart the most defenseless and innocent. "But this changes nothing. We will not let you leave until the choice is made." "I'll do it," Nate said calmly, stepping forward. I grabbed his arm, pulling him back.
"Like hell you will," I yelled. "We are all leaving right now, and if any of you try to stop me, I'll kill you."
"You cannot kill what is already dead," the boy said as dozens more corpses skittered forward behind him. Some were the naked bodies of toddlers and infants, murdered in their innocence. Many had deep slices on their throats and Gaskow smiles carved into their cheeks. They all showed growths of black mold that covered their bodies like hellish tattoos. Their pale white eyes looked filmy and lifeless, covered in cataracts and decayed to blindness.
"It's okay, Dad," Nate said, looking up at me with love in his eyes. "I'm not afraid of the darkness. I know it has eyes and it stares back at me, but I am not afraid. It's part of us too."
Pale, freezing hands grabbed me from all sides. They held me back as Nate meekly followed the boy into the darkness, looking like a lamb being led to slaughter. Nate turned off his headlamp, looking back at me one last time as he threw it down on the ground. They disappeared from view into the shadows at the end of the chamber. As soon as the blackness swallowed them up like a hungry mouth, I felt the hands release. I looked back, seeing that the walking corpses of the children had all disappeared. Now only Emily stood there, small and trembling. I ran to her, throwing my arms around her and hugging her tightly.
"We need to go find Nate," I whispered, tears streaming down my face. "We need to go deeper into the tunnel and get Nate back. We can't let them take him."
"Daddy, he's already gone," she said, crying and shaking.
I could feel her heart racing in her small, fragile chest.
"No, he's not," I screamed, pulling her forward by the arm. "We need to catch up with him."
We sprinted through the massive chamber, seeing the passageway abruptly narrow. Ahead of us, the cave suddenly ended into a hole that went straight down into the earth. I shone my flashlight down, trying to see the bottom, but it appeared to go thousands of feet deep. From far below us, I thought I caught glimpses of pale, cadaverous faces staring up at us with dead white eyes. Emily and I ran out of that cave of horrors, past the pale corpse of Melissa and the spreading pool of blood underneath her slashed throat. The cave floor sucked it up hungrily, drinking every drop until it turned into a clotted sandstone halo wreathing her body. We got the police there as fast as we could, telling them that Nate was lost in the cave and about the murder of my wife. They sent rescue units down into the black pit by the end of the chamber. I heard later that out of over a dozen people they sent down, only one of them returned alive. His hair had gone white with shock. totally insane. He was unable to tell anyone what he had seen down there or what had happened to the rest of his unit. As far as I know, he is still in some asylum to this day. The police found evidence of hundreds of murders in the cave, committed over a period of at least 30 years. Carlos's body had also mysteriously disappeared, leaving only drops of blood and pieces of torn red intestines behind. To this day, I still have constant nightmares about that place. I see Melissa's dilated pupils and slashed throat, her fingernails and lips turning blue. I see Nate as a bone-white, staggering thing with filmy eyes. And in my nightmares, those blind cataract eyes are always staring back at me.